Adventure starts at Klein Honda in Everett. Family owned since 1976. We offer a 7-year, 100,000-mile warranty and a 3-day exchange on all new Hondas. Visit KleinHonda.com for specials and a special trade-in bonus.
Only the best run here at the Indianapolis 500.
Mario, who do you feel you'll have to beat in this year's race?
People like A.J. Foyt and Bobby Unser, for instance.
Stand by for the checkered flag.
Absolutely incredible. Danny Sullivan spun in front of Mario Andretti.
A.J. has done it. He has won his fourth Indianapolis 500.
Beyond the Bricks with Jay Query and Mike Thompson. Brought to you by Quality Supply and Tool. Think outside the box. Store on 93.5 and 107.5. The Fan.
Hey, good evening to you. Jay Query along with Mike Thompson. Landon Kunz is the man that is putting everything together here on Beyond the Bricks. Our look at the personalities, the names, the storylines of the history of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. And of course, primarily, this show, especially if you listen in podcast form, the vast majority of those episodes with which you would be learning about things would be that relation to the Indianapolis 500-mile race. But this is the week of the Brickyard 400 and NASCAR at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. As a matter of fact, tomorrow everything will get underway in terms of the hauler parade and all of the events that take place with practice on Friday and qualifying on Saturday, racing in the Xfinity Series on Saturday, the race for the Brickyard 400 on Sunday. We'll get the schedule for everything in more finite detail coming up at the bottom of the hour. But first, let me welcome in the man who is kind of the brains of the operation, and that is not necessarily the biggest challenge when the only other brain involved would be mine. But Mike Thompson is the guy that puts together everything in terms of Beyond the Bricks, of the ideas of what we talk about and crossbreeding both from the NASCAR side and the IndyCar open wheel racing history side. And he is the audio archivist, if you will, of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Mike, tonight, this is going to be a fun one because we get to talk about somebody that I think is one of the more fun personalities and larger than life personalities at his time during the time that he was driving at the Speedway.
Absolutely. He was definitely a larger than life personality, one of the most charismatic people you'd ever want to meet. We'll talk about that a little bit later because I got to meet him on a couple of occasions, and really definitely one of the most charismatic people in the history of racing as far as I'm concerned.
We're talking about a guy that, and it was just last year, as a matter of fact, that I was at the Mid-Ohio Sports Car Course. Of course, that is essentially Mike's home track. And I have a friend that lives in Cleveland. Of course, Mid-Ohio Sports Car Course, for those that are unfamiliar, is in essentially Lexington, Ohio. Steams Corners, if you want to get really technical. But just about, I don't know, maybe 45 minutes to an hour north of Columbus and a little bit to the southwest of Cleveland. And so my buddy from Cleveland, we met for dinner for the night and decided that the closest place, I believe it's Ashland, Ohio. Am I correct in saying Ashland, Ohio, Mike?
That's correct, Ashland, Ohio. That's where the person we're talking about tonight is from.
Correct. So we're having dinner, and I said, hey, so what's the, other than being a meeting point that is convenient for the two of us, let's look up the history of Ashland. And in doing so, I very quickly learned that it not only was the hometown of, but the final resting place of, where we went and paid our respects to Tim Richmond, who is somebody who drove essentially, Mike, the easiest way to say it is if you look at the time period in which Tim Richmond was racing, and we're talking late 70s into the early 80s, he was a guy that not only from a personality standpoint was larger than life, but also was willing and capable of racing just about anything if it had a steering wheel and four wheels, no matter the series, whether it was USAC, whether it was NASCAR, whether it was open wheel, he could run and would run just about anything.
Oh, that's right. He ran USAC. People don't really remember the fact he ran USAC races. He was running on the dirt and things like that. I mean, he ran a series called Mini Indy at one point. You're right. He was running everything he could get. Anytime he could get a ride, he was moving up the ranks. And he was one of those guys that, they call it, I guess, a shooting star, because, it felt like he kind of came out of nowhere and became this, meteoric rise and just really became an instant star in racing.
And when you look at his overall, as you had talked about, kind of that meteoric rise, where all of a sudden, and sometimes this happens, where you have a driver that hits the scene, you hear things mentioned, and then all of a sudden, before you know it, everywhere you turn around, you are seeing stories of or hearing stories about their accomplishments. Tim Richmond was born in June of 1955 in Ashland, Ohio. And as you had talked about, by the time he got to Indianapolis, he was not yet 25 years old, running in the 1980 Indianapolis 500-mile race. That was his rookie campaign. And especially in a time period when you look at it where, you know, clearly back in the early 80s, you were talking about a number of entrants for the Indianapolis 500, a number of cars and quality drivers that did not even make the show back in those days. But that was not the case for Tim Richmond. When he showed up and showed up with his Penske Cosworth back in 1980, he was immediately one who showed that he had speed. Now, this is from May 9th of 1980, what you're about to hear. This is Lou Palmer, who himself would later go on to become the chief announcer of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Radio Network, with his track report of track activity for that first third of the month in May of 1980.
Would the pole at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway go to a rookie? Well, certainly the odds were against it until the final hour of practice on a Friday, when Tim Richmond showed everybody else how fast you could go. 193.5 miles an hour. A rookie in car number 21. Some changes in the offing too, it would appear. Johnny Rutherford and A.J. Foyt out in the cars that carried the T for backup. They could well become primary. Rutherford runs at 193.009, and Foyt with the Cosworth engine at 192.5 miles an hour. Others were going well. We had Spike Gelhausen at 191.9, and then an entire team moving up well above 190 miles an hour, with Rick Mears leading the way, followed by Mario Andretti and Bobby Unser. Those cars for the Penske team. Danny Ongais very late in the day, finally achieving as well 190.9 miles an hour. Others attempting to run up, and with an hour and a half practice on a Saturday before we go qualifying, well, other people who could be there might include Johnny Parsons, Tom Sneva, Poncho Carter, Tom Bagley, Jerry Sneva, finding at another area of speed the beginnings of a breakthrough, and Al Unser finally seeming to get it sorted out and moving to 188 miles an hour in a brand new ground effects car. Gordon Johncock, trouble, but cleared to run now. The fracture should not interfere, so he could get qualified. Sheldon Kinzer, who had a car on the wall earlier in the week, back out on the track in car number 24. It stayed together. And then the incident of the afternoon came, and not seriously so, when car number 19, being piloted by Dana Carter, got into a spin again at the south end of the track, but made no wall contact. Some progress made in terms of finding rides. Gary Bettenhausen was out in one of Sherman Armstrong's cars, number 46. John Mailer finally made an appearance in car 92, and Rich Vogler also in car 50. But he still has some laps to run to complete a driver's test. So does Ron Schumann, so does Bill Whittington. For them, it's a weekend wait before they can run the test to completion and then try to qualify on the final weekend. Again, at the top of the line on the final full day of practice before pole day qualifications, Tim Richmond, a rookie, at 193.507 miles an hour.
The pole in 1980 and the win, for that matter, would go to Johnny Rutherford, who would become a key figure within the story of Tim Richmond. More on that in a minute. But as for qualifying for Richmond himself, you heard Lou Palmer say he was a legitimate threat to start up front, but it was a crash in qualifying that would then cause a setback in trying to put the car that he would ultimately put into the field back together again. And as Tim Richmond talked about with Jackie Stewart, that effort and that new curveball did create some challenges for the rookie.
It's been a tumultuous month for Tim Richmond. Tim, this must be the biggest month that's ever happened to you.
I tell you, Jackie, a couple weeks ago was probably the best week of my life and the worst all in 7 days right there. You know, we ran as fast as we did, and we kind of crashed the car, but now the crew's done a fantastic job. We're back ready to run the race, so I tell you, it's been really fantastic for me.
I'd have to observe as a race driver, right now in your career, you're sort of all bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. I mean, it must be like a bottle of champagne being opened for you, because you're all bubbling full of life.
Yeah, I am, and I don't know what to say. I just, it's all new for me, doing things like this right here, and I don't know, it's amazing, and I really appreciate, you know, the fact that I've been able to be able to come here and have a chance to do what we've done, and I hope I can come back many years and keep.
You know, it's interesting, Mike. We mentioned Johnny Rutherford in that 1980 race and Tim Richmond as well. And one of the most iconic moments of the 1980 Indy 500, of course, happened at the end of the race as Johnny Rutherford is doing his victory lap and Tim Richmond runs out of fuel. It led to one of the most memorable moments of the 80s at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Moment indeed. Jim McKay on the call there along with Jackie Stewart as Tim Richmond just got out of his car, hopped on the side pod of Johnny Rutherford, and Johnny Rutherford said, go ahead and I'll take you to the area where Victory Lane is, as Johnny Rutherford celebrated his win and Tim Richmond celebrated a top 10 finish, ninth in that 1980 Indianapolis 500. Tim Richmond and Johnny Rutherford later would talk about that iconic moment.
You know, it's amazing how many people in that situation of Rutherford and I going to Victory Lane together, how many people thought that was a planned, you know, premeditated situation there. And in fact, it wasn't. You know, I ran out of fuel. Believe me, I would have not tried to run out of fuel, and because I would have finished probably fifth, I guess, instead of ninth. But then I was talking to the crowd, you know, waving and stuff and having a good time, and JR drove behind me, and I didn't even see him, and I was looking at the crowd, and they were going, you know, like they were going, look over here. And I looked to my left, and there was Rutherford. And, you know, I could just see his hand in there motioning me, come on, come on. And I ran up to the car, and, you know, those things were pretty fragile at the time, the side pods. And I said, right here. And he said, yeah, get on. So I got on, and, you know, I knew he'd won the thing. And he said, where'd you finish? And I said, I don't know. And it was kind of like a joke. I said, where'd you finish at? I said, you did win it, didn't you? And he said, yeah. And so then I held his hand up, and, you know, I was a little embarrassed of holding the number one sign up because I was doing it for him. So I held the number one up and pointed to his helmet. And, you know, it's not bad to go to Victory Lane either in a car or on a car at Indianapolis.
Well, he came running over, and he's patted me on the shoulder. Says, nice job. And I said, thank you. Get on. And he says, what? I said, get on. I'll give you a ride. He said, oh, okay. So he sat down on the side pod and hung on the roll bar, and I took him to Victory Lane. And I had always hoped that he would stick with IndyCar racing and maybe win Indianapolis, so I could always tell people that I gave him his first ride to Victory Lane.
Pretty good stuff, Mike, and obviously one that, you know, Johnny Rutherford, I think, has enjoyed that story over the years as much as, you know, Tim Richmond, who is no longer with us, but certainly fans in general just in reliving that. I've always gotten the impression Johnny Rutherford got a kick out of that story as well.
Oh, absolutely. And one of the things about that race, I mean, let's not forget, I mean, it was pretty much a foregone conclusion that if the Chaparral didn't break down, Johnny Rutherford was going to win that race. He was the class of the field. And so that's the memorable moment from that race is Johnny Rutherford. In fact, the painting that they did every year for the race is those two. You know, they called it the champ and the rookie. And it's those two riding toward victory lane. And that's the memorable moment of the race came after the race. So I think Johnny has always enjoyed that moment. And you could tell Tim Richmond enjoyed that moment as well.
Richmond would only go on to run 9 championship level races in IndyCar in a huge crash at Michigan later in that 1980 season. Obviously played, I think, a part in his decision to step away and get out of IndyCars.
Well, I'll tell you, the nickname that I acquired when I first went to Indianapolis was Captain Quick, and then it soon became Captain Crunch. And to be honest with you, I liked the way my feet were pointing.
See, again, the sense of humor, Mike, from Tim Richmond. That's the reason why he became such an engaging personality.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he was the life of the party at all the different things he was involved with, and he was very quick with a joke. And he was – the thing I liked about Tim Richmond is everybody was Tim Richmond's friend. I mean, you didn't have to know him, and I'll talk about that later in the show. You didn't really have to know him, but he made you feel like he was a friend of yours, you know. So we'll talk about that a little later in the show, but that's just the kind of guy he was.
Speedway historian emeritus Donald Davidson on Tim Richmond's short career in Indianapolis IndyCar racing.
Basically, at Indianapolis, he had two starts, 1980 and 81, and he was from Ashland, Ohio, and drove USAC sprint cars, and in fact, there was a division called Mini Indy for a short time, which was basically Super Vs, and he won one of those, and I think that was like 78 or 79, but he was also, and that's, you know, rear engine cars, and small rear engine cars, but he was also drove sprints quite successfully, and I remember him around quite a bit in 78 and 79. And in 79, he pulled a bit of a coup by, I remember that he went to the 500 victory banquet. Now, he had not had a ride for the 500 yet, but he went to the victory banquet, and his date were the three Hearst girls. It was Linda Vaughn and I think June Cochran. I don't remember who the third one was. And I thought, boy, is that guy an operator? He's showing up with the three Hearst girls as his date and hasn't even been in the race yet. Well, he was a very refreshing newcomer in 1980 and drove for a team. Actually, I think the team was underwritten by his father.
When we come back, more on the career of Tim Richmond and transitioning, as this show is kind of doing, from IndyCar into NASCAR and the Cup side of things. As we look back at one of the most gregarious personalities of the early 80s, Tim Richmond on this edition of Beyond the Brick.
This is the Bet365 Command Center. Get your race updates here all month long and make sure to enter for your chance to win $500 by predicting the winner of this year's race on July 27th. Go to 1075thefan.com to enter. Now, here's your 2025 race update brought to you by Bet365.
And that race update is pretty simple. It is here. The time is upon us because Thursday, 5 until 7. You've had that marked on the calendar for a while, and here we are on the doorstep of it. It is the Hauler Parade for the Brickyard 400 at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, as the haulers will work their way from 5 until 7 p.m. down Main Street and Speedway into the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. There will be a lot of activity and celebration going on with that, and Justin Haley, Todd Gilliland, Riley Herbst, Tyler Reddick all will be making appearances there, so you can see those four drivers all part of the Hauler Parade coming up 5 until 7 o'clock. Then on Friday, the gates will open at 10 o'clock. Practice sessions for Xfinity and for NASCAR as well. By the way, 6:30 p.m. Thursday night, I should have mentioned there's going to be USAC racing at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Saturday is qualifying day with everything setting the stage for the afternoon session of the Pennzoil 250 for Xfinity. And then it is 2 o'clock on Sunday, the running at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway of the Brickyard 400.
This is Beyond the Bricks, brought to you by Quality Supply and Tool. Think outside the box. Store on 93.5 and 107.5 The Fan.
Hi, I'm Tim Richmond, and this is an original poster of my Indianapolis 500 career created by racing artist Ron Burton. This poster is now available for $5 at your 40 Guarantee Auto stores throughout Indiana. I hope you will follow my racing progress throughout May as I drive the Guarantee Auto WTTV special in this year's Indianapolis 500, the greatest spectacle in racing.
There would be a very famous racing poster involving Tim Richmond that falls into the category of if you know, you know. But we're talking about Tim Richmond tonight and his short career in IndyCar transitioning over to Cup cars. And in addition to that, anytime that you can hear a retro ad for WTTV, Cowboy Bob and Janie and the rest of them in Indianapolis, it is pretty awesome. Jake Query along with Mike Thompson, Landon Kunz, editing everything together for us tonight. And Mike, let's talk about that transition now for Tim Richmond in the 1980 and 81 Indy 500 and then crossing over. And now we get into where the legend really continued to grow, talking about his Cup car side of things.
I just want to point out I have one of those posters at my house, my palatial estate, as you call it, in Ohio. But yeah, those posters are pretty cool, by the way. But yeah, what's cool is Tim Richmond actually had some struggles in 81 trying to make the race. They actually had to buy a car from A.J. Foyt to get him in the race in 81. And so it was a lot more of a struggle in 81 than it was in 80 for him. So then in the summer of 80, he had actually started running some cup races, some NASCAR races. And he was with DK Ulrich for a while, a longtime NASCAR competitor. And then he switched over actually to the people remember JD Stacy's team. And JD Stacy was a guy who at one point seemed like he owned most of the NASCAR grid. He had like nine different cars at one point. It seemed like he had a lot of different cars on the grid, kind of like the people might remember the Scandia team in the early IRL days. Seemed like they had a bunch of the field as well. But JD Stacy had a bunch of cars, and Tim Richmond drove at one point for JD Stacy after Mark Martin left the team. And Tim Richmond won his first two races in NASCAR for JD Stacy. And then he ended up moving over to Raymond Beadle, his team, Raymond Beadle, the famous, the Blue Max NHRA guy. And he picked up a couple more wins there in the old Milwaukee Pontiac. And he was really starting to make a name for himself in NASCAR. And that was kind of, he never looked back at coming back to IndyCars because he was really making a name for himself in NASCAR at that point.
And he also was making a name for himself when opportunity would present itself as, again, that charisma, that colorful character and the sense of humor and just the overall gregarious nature of Tim Richmond. For example, when he had an engine failure at Michigan and decided to take the opportunity to, well, just kind of become a commentator, if you will.
We have a radio hookup with Tim Richmond. We'll try to see if we can make radio contact with him and find out what happened.
Tim, this is Larry Neuber up on ESPN Control. Do you know exactly what happened, Tim?
Not really, Larry. Something let go in the bottom end of the thing. Excuse me, just before we went into turn one there, it let go. And luckily, we kept her in one direction there. The oil didn't get on the rear tire. So something in the motor let go. I can't tell you what it was, though.
A tremendous amount of smoke, even in the cockpit, as you came around turn number two and down the backstretch. Was vision a problem, Tim?
It wasn't really a problem at all, Larry. It was inside the cockpit. I could still see outside, though. And the main problem was just keeping the car straight going in. When it came out the bottom end, it tried to get the car loose on the rear tires. But luckily, we made it. Unfortunately, we're going back behind the wall here and probably won't be back out for the day.
Well, thanks a lot, Tim. A tough break, and you know, you've won a lot of races recently and a lot of different kinds of racetracks, so I know this is a major disappointment.
Pretty good stuff from inside the cockpit in terms of being able to give good insight as to not only what his car was feeling, but also what was happening to his car. But when it would come for the opportunity for Tim Richmond also to just simply have fun, we have seen plenty of times where rain delays have been an opportunity or just broadcast delays in general for us to get to know drivers a little better. That certainly was the case with Tim Richmond during one rain delay with a very young, by the way, Jack Arute.
Well, what do race drivers do when it's raining? Let's find out as we go down to the pit area and Jackie Arute.
Bob, one of the things that race drivers like to do in the rain delay is pretend that they're TV commentators. And Tim Richmond has really gone one step further. He has members of his crew all over this racetrack, and they've been playing our parts throughout this rain delay. Tim, we understand you're all hooked up on the radio. Do you want to introduce your crew?
Well, I wouldn't mind doing that. We, for some reason, got started. Everybody just left their radios and headgear on. I took my helmet off, and one of the guys gave me theirs. And we just been sitting here actually pretending like radio personalities, talking about the weather, going back and reports, and having interviews up and down the pit road. And right now, I'd like to go to with my radio to our Turn 4 location with Larry Neuber, who's a TV personality. Let's turn around here.
Larry Neuber, do you have a report, a weather report down at Turn 4 for us? He's down in his location there. Could you come out and check it out for us, please?
Yes, Tim, this is Larry Newbern here, and I'm here, and it is raining, I'm telling you. I'm glad to be here with ESPN, and the rain is coming down, but I hope we can get this race in. We have men stationed all over the track, and it's really wet, but the clouds are blowing away, and I think we may be able to get this race in. It's really raining.
Thank you very much, Larry. And now we're going to go over to our in-car reporter, Bob Jenkins, over here inside our car. Could we turn over here and take a look? Out of the car. Okay, could you give us a report there, Bob Jenkins, inside the car? Could you raise your flap, please?
Everything is dry and okay in here. Back to you now.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Jenkins. This is what kind of fun we've been having while the rain's going on here, and I'm getting wet. And how about you? What's your report here?
Tim Richmond, this is Benny Parsons. Do you hear me?
Yes, sir, Benny. Go ahead. I'm listening.
Well, you know, if they start this race, there's no way in the world you're going to be able to race, is there? You're having too much fun.
This might be bad by the time we get this race started, but we might go plug them in now and recharge them, I hope.
Well, that's the story from down here in a very wet pit road. One thing I'm sure of, though, Bob, I don't want to be a race car driver.
Yeah, it's too bad that we can't retaliate and pretend like we're race drivers once in a while.
Wow, those guys are really having fun.
They are. And I
you can see it right there, Mike, obviously. First off, Jackie Arute, I love that. But just the overall, you know, fun sense of humor and creativity of Tim Richmond, clearly you understand why he became a fan favorite.
Oh, no doubt about it. What I liked about that clip especially is Larry Neuber was from Maumee, Ohio, which is a suburb of Toledo, and I used to live in Maumee, Ohio, and nobody from Maumee, Ohio talks with that kind of accent, but I just thought that was a lot of fun. So, just, you know, the creativity and the fun and the fact that he was willing to get out there and have a good time and just really he put himself out there and was one of the guys and just really a fun loving guy was Tim Richmond for sure.
And he obviously was right on the doorstep at that point of a prolific career and period within Cup Racing because the personality in general and the talent would allow him to land an opportunity with Rick Hendrick's powerhouse team. He would go on to win 9 races and the Folgers coffee machine. But one of the strangest moments he had was his in-race interview at North Wilkesboro. This is in 1987, and he conducted an interview while racing. Take a listen.
Tim Richmond, this is ESPN Control. Do you read me?
Yeah, go ahead. I got you loud and clear.
What was wrong with the car to begin with? Most impressive. aggressive, I'll tell you that. I can't imagine him running a complete green flag lap while talking to us.
You also got an idea as just to how loud things were inside those cars back in that time period. Tim Richmond doing an interview while racing inside of a stock car. We come back more on Tim Richmond and the sad turn of events in terms of his life and the speculation thereof. When we look back at one of the most colorful characters in the history of IMS, Tim Richmond on this edition of Beyond the Bricks.
This is Beyond the Bricks, brought to you by Quality Supply and Tool. Think outside the box. Store on 93.5 and 107.5 The Fan.
For Grand National Stock Car Racing, the most competitive racing series in the world. And now the book that tells the story is here. Hi, I'm Tim Richmond of Fast Company's Racing number 29 Ford. With Linda Vaughn and your collector's copy of Grand National Stock Car Racing, The Other Side of the Fence.
Tim, there's 144 pages and over 204 color pictures of the driver, the teams, and their incredible racing machines, and the fans just love it.
It is the most fantastic book we've ever seen.
Everybody needs one or two.
I've enjoyed it. I bought two of them.
Linda, The Other Side of the Fence with you on the cover captures the intense excitement of auto racing and its intimate behind-the-scenes look at what we, the drivers, crews, and car owners experience.
For a limited time, Grand National Stock Car Racing, The Other Side of the Fence is just $15. You'll save $10 on this $25 value.
Here's how to order.
Send $15 plus $2 handling per book or send signature and credit card number to Fast Company, Post Office Box 26742, Richmond, Virginia 23261, or order toll-free by phone.
Back live at...
Anyway, we should point out, by the way, this is an archived advertisement. Sending information to get the book now is not going to work for you. That was quite some time ago. Linda Vaughn, Tim Richmond, who is the subject of tonight's Beyond the Bricks, and... taking a look back at Tim Richmond tonight, Mike, the reality is this. In the mid-80s, when one would have AIDS, which is what Tim Richmond would acquire, there were a lot of questions, not only about what AIDS was, but also about Tim Richmond. And it would create some challenges for him in his career.
Yeah, a lot of questions, but there was a lot of, as you said, paranoia, and a lot of really terrible things happened in that time frame. You know, he tried to race. At one point, he got banned by NASCAR for testing positive for Sudafed and Advil, because basically they were trying to out his condition. They wanted him to reveal that he had AIDS, because they basically didn't want him around and they wanted to out him. And so they concocted this drug test and said that he had, you know, tested positive for drugs. Well, he hadn't tested positive for drugs. He tested positive for taking Sudafed and Advil, which are legal. You can buy them over the counter, obviously. And so it was really unfortunate what happened. You know, it was a ridiculous attempt to out his condition, to be candid with you. And it was just sad all around. You know, I mean, the way it was handled, you know, by NASCAR, I think they admitted later that they should have handled it differently. But as you said, there was a lot of paranoia, but there were also a lot of things I think we need to take from it that were, there were people that were in Tim's corner that were really good to him. People like Kyle Petty, people like Dale Earnhardt, who would always sit with him at the driver's meeting and showed that they weren't afraid to sit with Tim Richmond, because people knew that there was something wrong and people knew that he had something that was going on, but you know, that always stood by him. People like Kyle Petty, people like Dale Earnhardt, they always stood by him. And so I think, you know, we can take a lesson from the fact that those people were there for Tim Richmond.
In 1987, Tim Richmond would have a near-fatal bout with double pneumonia. He also won the All-Star race in May, and then he drove his first Cup Series race at Pocono Raceway after that illness. And despite the fact that his health was in question, he won the race.
It'll be white flag next time by. When they come across the stripe, Harold Kinder will show them the white flag, which means there'll be one more lap remaining. There's the flag, final lap. This is the 200th revolution of this triangular-shaped racetrack, and right now the battle seems to be further back as well.
You get a look at that 170-mile-per-hour conga line down that front straightaway at 7/10 of a mile. Richmond leads the way. Elliott has less than 2 miles to try to reel him in, but it's Tim Richmond by 7 car lengths.
Further back Kyle Petty is still in third. Cale Yarborough fourth. The battle behind that, Earnhardt, Bobby Allison, and Ricky Rudd in that order. There's Elliott. And there you see the difference as they work the short chute heading across the tunnel towards turn number three.
Tim Richmond's got to be grabbing that steering wheel. White knuckle has the foot planted firmly on the floorboard, holding it wide open. There's a look at Richmond, 32 years of age. Could the comeback be complete, Eli? Could he take a checkered flag and win it? What a tearful celebration that's going to be. Richmond less than a half a mile from victory.
If he wins, it would be the third straight victory for him here at Pocono. The crowd waving Richmond with the hand out of the window. And Tim Richmond has picked up the victory in the Miller High Life 500 here at Pocono. Bill Elliott is second. Kyle Petty third. Cale Yarborough is fourth. Let's see Earnhardt now across the line to finish fifth ahead of Bobby Allison and Ricky Rudd.
Whatever.
I'm very happy, Tim Richmond, with a Cinderella story and a Cinderella ending, Tim, and you have to be happy with what happened there. Did you ever really think that this could be possible with everything that's happened?
Well, yeah, I did. You know, I... It feel a need for speed, huh? Thanks, Harry. yeah, I really did. You know, when you've got this good equipment sitting under you, you know, that layoff, it was devastating, but, you know, I didn't lose any. I thought about it every day what I would do when I come back, so I wasn't that I forgot how to drive a race car. It was just that I'd take my time in a few turns in the road there to make sure I was doing the right thing, and then when it was all back to me. Somebody asked me on the way to the car what I felt about a win today, and I told him it was 100% I felt.
Tim Richmond would win again the next week at Riverside, but by the end of the summer, he was out of a race car for good. And Mike, you got a chance to talk to Tim Richmond at his final NASCAR race, correct?
Yeah, it was kind of an interesting deal. My uncle got me pit passes for the second Michigan race that year. And I was only 17, so I was breaking the rules, unfortunately. But I looked a lot older because I was 6'6". And I was 17 years old, so I could pass as being 18 years old. So my uncle had pit passes through Champion Spark Plug, and I was standing there and on qualifying day, and qualifying was going on, and I was just kind of standing there near the media center under. They had a little overhang there, and I was just kind of standing there, and Tim Richmond came running, I mean just running, sprinting out. And he said, "Is qualifying going on?" And I said, "Yeah." I said, I think your spot is already gone." And he went sprinting down there, and he had missed his spot. He had overslept. And then he came walking back after he found out that he had missed his spot. And he came up to me and he just started talking to me. And he's like, "Yeah, I overslept, missed my spot," and just started talking to me as if we were like best friends. And he talked for 5 or 6 minutes, and just made me feel like I was like in his inner circle, you know, because, you know, I had been friendly to him a few minutes before that. And I don't know if it was just a situation where, because, you know, he was dying, of this disease, and, you know, somebody had been nice to him, that he kind of took me in for a few minutes there. And it really meant a lot to me. It still chokes me up a little bit thinking about it, because I didn't know at the time he was dying, obviously. We didn't know that he, you know, had AIDS or anything like that. But, you know, he treated me like I was one of his best friends for 5, 6, 10 minutes, you know, and just stood there talking to me about racing and just was super friendly to me. And I actually had a picture of him with me, and I had him sign a picture, and he wrote, you know, to Mike, you know, best wishes, Tim Richmond. I still have it. And it just meant a lot to me to have that few minutes with him. And, you know, it's something I really cherish. And I actually told this story. We had a poker night at Dick Jordan's house, the late Dick Jordan's house. And I actually got to tell this story to Cody Swanson, the great USAC driver. And I told him this story, and he was like, "You got to meet Tim Richmond. Tell me all about it." You know, and it still resonates, I guess, is what I'm trying to say, to this day, that Tim Richmond's such a magical name in racing. And Cody Swanson, you know, who's done everything. I mean, if I had $1 million or $2 million and I could, you know, buy somebody into the Indianapolis 500, Cody Swanson would be probably my first choice, because, I mean, I think he's a great talent and I'd love to see him. To see Cody Swanson's face light up, he's like, "You met Tim Richmond? Tell me all about it." You know, it just tells you what an impact Tim Richmond had.
Well, and of course, you talked about the difficulties that NASCAR had presented for him in 1988. And even though Tim Richmond was in fact nearing the end of his life, he still wanted to make a comeback in NASCAR. And he talked about that with Bob Jenkins on ESPN's Speed Week in 1988.
Tim's style has always been aggressive, whether it be in a race car professionally, at play on a cigarette boat on the ocean, or working out with weights and aerobics.
I thrive on competition. I mean, it's like I'm addicted to competition.
His competitive spirit meshed up well with the fatherly guidance of Harry Hyde in 1986, and the team won 7 of 17 Winston Cup events. But after the season concluded, Tim's competitiveness, his drive to satisfy too many commitments, cost him his health, a life-threatening bout of double pneumonia. Although he came back in 87 and recorded 2 straight victories, his health was still not good. He resigned from the Rick Hendrick team amidst rumors of drug abuse. Some say those rumors led to NASCAR's decision to implement a drug testing program for 1988.
Tim, do you have a drug problem? I'm sorry, but that question has been asked more than once here, more than once by everybody. And I am not answering that question. I am going to let the drug test in Daytona answer it. And NASCAR can answer it for y'all. And if they don't answer it the right way, then I'll have my little bottle, and there will be another answer there. Because I know whether it's dirty or whether it's clean, and it is clean.
You know, everybody talked about Tim having some problems with drugs. Tim was sick with the flu or the pneumonia or what, and it got him down, and They've tried to prove drugs on him, and, you know, he's taken drug tests, and he's been in the hospital, and surely if he had been on drugs, it would have came out when he went in the hospital, because everybody in the hospital don't keep secrets. So I don't feel like Tim was using drugs. I think Tim had some other problems, and hopefully Tim can get his problems worked out and make a comeback.
Is your health such that you can run a full Winston Cup season?
The bottom line is I won't ever come back unless the schedule changes and run a full blown Winston Cup tour for the Winston Cup Championship. Winston Cup Championship is very important, but I don't think it's as important as, you know, enjoying myself and the time it takes to do that. I'm not going to do that. I mean, this might sound corny, but I mean, I went to a Halloween party the other night. I mean, this has been back when that I've never been to. I mean, I dressed up with the mask on and got all, you know, crazed out there and had a good time. I'm going to Bike Week in Daytona. I've got me a new Harley I'm going to be there with. You know, I'm enjoying. I miss racing, but, you know, there's a lot of things because of racing I miss.
Do you have any other goals in racing?
I want to go drag racing, if that's the question. My lifelong goal, and this is not something that's new, it's been a lifelong goal, was to be in a funny car. I mean, I very much respect those guys. Unlike a lot of Roundy Round guys, they don't think drag racing much. I do. But I would really, if I got in a funny car, my first choice would have the name the Blue Max on the side of it. That's, the Blue Max is funny cars.
Of course, Tim used to drive for Raymond Beadle in Winston Cup. He says the two are talking about that funny car, but nothing definite yet. Another thing, Larry, Tim says his main goal in life now is to get married, settle down, and have a family.
Okay, Bob.
Sadly, Tim Richmond would pass away on August 13th of 1989 in the state of Florida. Tim Richmond, who, as we mentioned earlier, is now resting in Ashland, Ohio, his hometown, passed away at the age of 34. For Landon Coots, Mike Thompson, I'm Jake Query. Thanks for helping us take a look back at the great Tim Richmond on this episode of Beyond the Bricks.